Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. It is the 27th of June, and we are delighted to have you join us this morning. It is a beautiful day, and we thank you very much for sharing some time of that day with us. Let me introduce the panel to you. A reminder, you can be with us in spirit by sending us a note, sending us a letter. It's panel@wamc.org. You just email us and you can comment or have a question on any of the topics that we discuss throughout the morning. panel@wamc.org. We welcome this morning to the program J.P. Miller, publisher and founder of Empire Report. Good morning, sir. How
are
you?
Good morning, Joe.
Very nice to have you with us. Mike Spain is here. He is the associate editor of the Times Union newspaper, and it's a thrill, as always, to have Mike with us.
Thank you very much.
Well, I always like looking down. Oh, good, Mike's here. That's good. Mike is here.
Because it's been a proven fact, due to sociological research, that nobody dislikes Mike and everybody loves him.
I can provide you with a list later if you like.
Well, we certainly love you here. So it's Mike Spain this morning, and also Alan Chartok, who also has the same list. Everyone loves Alan.
And oh, yeah.
Alan's here with Murray. Murray the dog is with us. We are thrilled to have Murray in the studio.
His ears just perked up when you said his name.
What
Joe?
Brings Murray to the?
Well, last night we were at an event with the wonderful Julie Boyd and the people at Barrington Stage when Roselle's phone went off, and she looked down at the message and it said that our granddaughter was being born. So she got, we got back to Great Barrington. She got in the car and took off. And I'm going to go visit on Friday. She's helping with the taking care of our grandson, who, you know, is obviously.
So this is, your grandson is Noah. This would be Noah's sister.
Noah's sister, that's her name.
Yes,
Noah's sister.
Noah's sister.
When I called last night, I said, what's the name? They said, we don't know.
to be determined.
Yeah.
To be
congratulations.
Determined.
That's great.
Well, that is great. Yes. Congratulations.
Mazel tov.
Yes.
Well put, Michael.
Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah. you did as good as we can do. All right. Let's talk about what's going on in the world. And actually, I do just a quick thing here. We have our First Amendment fund that's going on.
Yeah.
And we are trying to raise $133,000 for our First Amendment fund. You will remember that we raised the first third in February.
In record time.
And we are looking to raise the second third over the next few days. And the First Amendment Fund is something that is really a resource to protect WAMC from financial pressures. Now, what could be a financial pressure? Oh, well, the federal government taking CPB money away.
Yeah. And, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, there are those people who believe that public broadcasting deserves, public support because it does things that commercial radio stations would not, like every Tanglewood concert, for example. You know, you don't see that around very much. Or the Metropolitan Opera, and we hear from a lot of people who say, don't you dare take the opera off the radio. And, opera's in my favorite, but I keep it there assuming everybody wants it. But if you don't have a public radio station, you're not going to have the opera. I'll tell you that right now. But this public radio station has always spoken truth to power. We will continue to do it. This program you're listening to right now is a huge advantage for the radio station because so many people listen to it. And people walk up to me in the street all the time and they say, thank goodness you're here because, I depend on this for sanity. So, look, folks, it's so simple. We can make up what the federal government is taking away. But we got to get to that $133,000. Yesterday, a few people said you shouldn't be raising funds except on fund drive days. Well, it was only 19 hours of fund drive, and somebody actually said yesterday, and the fund drive goes on forever anyway. Well, it doesn't. And ladies and gentlemen, you may not believe that the federal government should give any money to public radio. In which case, you should. It's that simple.
Right. It has to be supported. And we want to just note that the Saratoga Performing Arts Center. We had Liz Sobel here yesterday and telling us all about what's coming up, including the New York City Ballet on July 5th through the 15th and the Philadelphia Orchestra August 4th through the 18th. Well, we have undated lawn tickets for the Saratoga Performing Arts Center, and you get a pair of tickets, undated lawn tickets, a pair of those for $100 if you help out the First Amendment Fund. All you have to do is go to WAMC.org. When you go to the website, there's a box right on the right-hand side that says, help the First Amendment Fund. You click on that, boom. And if you don't want the tickets, that's fine. You can give any amount you want. That's easy. And there's also a drop-down menu, and you can have other great WAMC swag as well. Pretty much whatever you want.
Yeah. And one last thing here, Joe, and that is that I'm a little concerned. A little concerned because, you know, it went slowly less yesterday. And I think when you take a look at the marches and things, they're slowing down also. So I think maybe people have said, okay, we have to live with this no matter what, and we're not going to resist. We're not going to fight back. Hey, folks, I'm depending on you.
Simple as that. Please help. It's WAMC.org, WAMC.org. If you are allergic to your computer, 1-800-323-9262. 1-800-323-9262.
Wonderful staff members are standing by.
Indeed they are. That was only 9 minutes for the people that say that you hijacked the first half of the show. We will be back and continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. All right, we're going to get on to the issue of the day. We just got a letter of people who are watching us on the stream, and what did they say?
They say, hey, dear panel, we want to see Murray the dog. He's in the studio, but not on the studio cam. And congratulations, Alan, on another grandchild. All the best, and that's from Catherine, and that's wonderful. And here's Murray. I'm holding him in my lap.
Okay, yeah, put the paper down there because the only way. Yes, there you go. Oh, look, a little ear wag.
What do you think, Murray?
Oh, Murray is so sweet.
Yeah, Murray's the best.
Murray's a great dog.
Yeah, okay.
All right,
Murray. That's it, kid.
All right, you had your.
Murray, look.
You had your 5 minutes, your 15 minutes of fame. There you go. All right, let's talk about what is happening in the news and what's happening in the world. And there's a lot of places that we could begin. And I'm going to start with the health bill, which is in trouble as the GOP support seems to be waning after the CBO score, that stands for Congressional Budget Office, said that it was slightly less costly than the House bill, but it would still cause 22 million people to lose insurance. With that announcement, and there are some ups, there are some positives and negatives for Republicans, and the information that came out for, and I shouldn't say Republicans, although they are the chief supporters of the bill, but for those supporting the bill, there were some positives and negatives. But now we have Senators Susan Collins and Rand Paul say they would vote against even debating the measure after the CBO score. Senator Mitch McConnell, the chief author of the bill, must change the minds of reluctant Republicans, withdraw the bill, or let it be defeated. As of right now, from my understanding, it's all full steam ahead to look at a vote on Thursday or maybe Friday before the recess for the summer. So,
how much will you pay me? You know, right now, the majority leader, the Senate majority leader, has great amounts of funds at his disposal, public funds. You know, you want a bridge, you want a walkway, you want a this. We can do this for you, or we can protect you. Now, one of the big problems is the governor of many of these states is dependent, and their Republican governors are dependent on Medicaid money. And they can't really afford to lose that Medicaid money, and so they're leaning on their Republican senators. The senators are worried that they're going to get a primary if they misbehave. Do I believe for a second the sort of New York Times glaring headlines every morning now that it looks bad for McConnell and for the Republicans? I don't believe a word of it. I think, in fact, you know, it's going to be miraculous if it does get defeated. That's my guess.
Well, it would probably not come up for a vote if the votes weren't there. He counts all his votes, and if they hold off and do not take action before the July 4th weekend, I think
they'll be back.
It'll be a different strategy when they come back after the
recess.
But
they will be back.
Yeah, they will be back. You're exactly right. I mean, if they have a vote, it'll probably be because he has pulled together enough to get it passed.
Okay, so if they don't put it up for a vote, then we just go through this again?
Yes.
That's right. But what will happen in the interim will be the senators will go back to their home districts and they'll hear from the constituents. They'll probably in some places be faced with protests and editorials in all the newspapers, et cetera, et cetera. And the governors, like just in the state of Utah, the governor is a Republican and he's leaning on his Republican senator to vote against this because he doesn't want to see a drop in the Medicaid. Exactly what you were saying. And this is going on around the country. And if the senator from Utah doesn't do the right thing, he'll face a Republican primary. That the people who want this health bill to pass will wage. Or he's also vulnerable to the Democrats when it comes. And Hillary Clinton won Utah. So, I mean, it's a very complicated situation for some senators.
This is what I love about politics, because it seems to be, JP, that the argument is it worse to pass a bad bill or to pass no bill?
Right. And McConnell is experiencing exactly what he didn't want to experience, which is what Paul Ryan had, was this balance between the moderates and the conservatives. And McConnell's moderates in the Senate are saying this bill is too cruel. And the conservatives are saying this bill is not cruel enough. And McConnell wants a quick vote. He wants it done so that he doesn't have to withstand the pain of what you all were talking about, were these town halls during recess, which are bad, bad headlines for the Republicans, no matter what happens. So I think McConnell's going to try and get a quick vote on this. And there are holdouts on both sides. It seems like both the senator from Maine—
Collins,
right?
And yep. Senator Rand Paul from Kentucky have both
on the
really,
other side.
On the other side, have both dug their heels in. One on the conservative side, one on the moderate side. It's hard to see something happen.
I don't believe a word of it.
Well, they can only lose two. They can only lose two votes. But we apparently now have between five, depending on where they are at any given moment, 5 to 7 members who are leaning or are against the bill. So the question, to your point, Alan, can you buy off all 7?
Yeah. Oh, there's plenty of money to buy everybody off. And look, McConnell, we all know, is a wise old turtle. We know he is.
I wish he'd stop smiling every time he talks about taking... He just has that insipid smile on his face every time he talks about taking away the insurance of 22 million people that I just find deplorable.
No, he's a wise old turtle, and he has a problem, in addition to everything else we've heard about getting this bill through, he's got a little problem called Donald Trump. And let's just say he's wise enough to say, all right, you're insisting on this, you want it, we'll give it to you, it'll go down, and I'll be able to say, I tried. What's so bad about that?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think he really wants to deliver it. He wants the president to reward him as the president can.
And, oh, yeah, like what?
Well, I think, he can...
Move the Capitol to Kentucky?
Right, that's right.
Well, it did look bad for Speaker. It was bad for Speaker Ryan when he couldn't get it through. He looked bad, and McConnell wants to avoid that fate as much as possible, I think.
So you have a letter or two there, Alan.
Yes,
and then we're gonna take
a
break.
Sadie, let us know, and I heard this too. I just listened to the NPR interview with the esteemed senator from Wisconsin, who stated we had to make these cuts to reduce the burgeoning national debt. Except, what will they do with the money? Add to the federal coffer? No tax cuts for the 1% and sweetened deals for supporting senators, hypocrisy. And, of course, there is the matter of giving the money that they're saving to the military, to the so-called military-industrial complex.
Debt reduction, but it would be by 2026. We should note that. Okay, and next letter, and then we're going to take a break.
Anything you say, Joe. Steve says, you just had a big fund drive, so confusing to listeners, you have to raise more, and it seems that there are more and more underwriters and commercials on the station. Give us a break. Let me tell you something, folks. There'll be no apologies from me. There'll be no... Okay, you got it? Let me just say this to you very specifically, Steve. There'll be no apologies from me. We have to keep this station going. The idea is that the feds come along and they want to take $400,000 out of our budget. And I'm not going to apologize to you, Steve, or anyone else for making sure that this station goes forward. We have to make up that extra $400,000, and with your help, we will.
We welcome you to write to us, panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We were talking just a moment ago about the health bill and the fact of the CBO score. I do also want to mention the fact that Senate leaders were working yesterday to modify their plans, adding a provision that would penalize consumers for not keeping their plans by imposing a 6-month waiting provision before they could re-enroll. The change, intended to satisfy insurers and minimize the number of Americans who may drop their plans if the bill becomes law, received measured praise from some industry officials, but sharp criticism from patient advocates. Also, it's been interesting to me that even the insurance companies don't seem to like the bill either.
No, but I mean, that's really what Obamacare tried to do with the mandate that people have health insurance or pay a tax if they don't have it. This is doing it a little differently. What they'll do is charge you a 30% upcharge if you have let your health insurance lapse, and then, oh, I need to get a hip replacement. I better jump back into an insurance program or something and then jump back in. I mean, the goal is the same. They see a value in having people insured. It's just a little more painful in the way that they approach it. And it's not a quote-unquote tax, and therefore it's more acceptable, I suspect.
Yeah, it's. I find it astounding. Since 2010, Republicans have won seats in Congress every year running against Obamacare. And now they finally are in power in 2016, and they're not willing to actually go through and do it. And I just and people
well not say, go well, through and do it. I'm sorry, but yeah. Also to be talking about it for 7 years and not have something more concrete in a plan that could pass and have the votes.
And then there's another aspect to this. Now the outs are in and the ins are out.
We're talking about belly buttons.
Hey man, stop! I was right there. I was right about
you
to
just
say
stole
it.
The punchline, Mike. Come on.
We've been married too long. So, but now the outs, who used to be the ins, now are doing the same thing to the other guys, saying they're going to take your health care away from you, and it does seem to have some resonance. That's interesting.
And the leadership, the Democrat leadership, I think, believes now that this health care issue is a much better electoral issue than talking about Russia, because this affects every single man, woman, and child, every voter in America, health care. And it seems like they're taking the gasoline a little bit off the Russia talk and putting it more on health care, and I think it will help them in the polls.
That is the effective way. You know, that is how astute Trump is. And his people are. They're able to steer it different directions by coming out with different things every single day that are a distraction to the previous one. Mm-hmm. You know, in this bill, there's all these little carve-outs to get, like, Lisa Murkowski, the senator from Alaska, to join in where it'll protect a very low population state, low population density state. A few other states will benefit from that, and they carve out different things. And the thing making news back here in New York is that this bill will continue to have what is known as the Faso-Collins carve-out, which would require only New York State, of all the 50 states, only New York State to fully fund Medicaid and take the burden off local counties, which John Faso, the congressman for the Hudson Valley, part of the Hudson Valley in the Capital Region, he backs this along with Representative Collins from the Buffalo area. And now Governor Cuomo is saying yes. Yeah, crazy. Well, he's certainly upset by this. And he says, should this pass, he'll have to impose a $2 billion tax on New Yorkers to cover the amount that the state is going to have to pick up from local counties. And in fact, Ken Lovett at the Daily News reported that he's even talking about making it a special line item on your tax bill. This is the additional tax that you're paying because this.
But JP and Mike, maybe you guys could help me with this. If you make the state pay for it and take the burden off from the counties,
right,
isn't it an equal lift? In other words, I've had a little problem. So your county bill should go down, shouldn't it?
That's right.
And your state bill should go up.
Right. And so he wants to make sure that he's, as you get it in one pocket, he's taking it out of the other pocket. So it's kind of a wash, and it's really
robbing Peter to pay Paul, as we would say.
Arguably, but Faso and other conservatives are saying, well, why don't you just start lowering, you know, hitting that budget surplus you have and lowering the tax that you're putting on people and pay for it, and then give counties a break and localities a break. And I think that plays very well in New York, especially in upstate counties that are burdened by Medicaid costs.
And people see Governor Cuomo make headlines each and every week giving different pork projects out to different localities for tens and 20s and 50s and hundreds of millions of dollars.
All to be paid for, by the way, JB, after he's out of office.
After he's out of office. So Faso and
Collins. Where's it going? Is anyone
having it? It's going to be president.
Right. So Faso and Collins say, I imagine somewhere in that $160 billion yearly budget that New York taxpayers pay for, somewhere you could find a couple of billion dollars to pay for
Medicaid. I think that plays well in Peoria or whatever upstate town you were in.
Yes. Peoria.
Yes.
And I think the New York City budget is something like $85 billion per year. So you add the 160 plus the 85, you're getting down to $240 billion a year of government.
So there's a little
spending.
Bit of leeway in there. You're
maybe
suggesting?
They can find a couple of dollars for the Medicaid rather than having people pay it out of their property tax bills, which currently is how it works.
We have some letters, Alan.
We do indeed.
We'll get to those, and then we'll take a break.
Okay, regarding your comment on protests slowing down, we went to the Women's March in New York City and the healthcare protest en masse. Please keep your listeners aware of any upcoming protests or tell us where we can find them out. We are eager to attend them, and that's Jeff from Colony. All right, and Linda says, it is clear that the reigning Republicans will not give up dismantling healthcare for citizens. They have already chipped away at the Affordable Care Act enough to hamper its effectiveness. But like California, we can create our own in states or regions. I suggest that New England join together to create a healthcare plan with a larger pool of participants than individual states. There will never be a compromise between those who believe in cooperation to provide healthcare for all and those who think the government should only provide military protection and protection to the wealthy elite and do not believe that all lives are equal in value. From Linda.
It's like the 13 original colonies getting together and doing their whole thing. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know, that's an interesting approach. Regional health care packs like Massachusetts could join with some others and, you know, kind of do it.
Annapolis Convention. Do you remember what the Annapolis Convention was called for?
What was it called for?
It was called for navigating navigable waters in the United States. And it turned out that they said, okay, we have to scrap the whole Articles of Confederation, not to bore you, and create a constitution. And that's how we got the Constitutional Convention.
I think right now states aren't allowed to band together. I think that it's each state has to do their own thing, which may be something that they'll change in the bill.
Brucey says, the way Joe phrased it sounds like the positives and negatives in the CBO report are about equal. The bill is horrible for people who have just gotten insurance for the first time in their lives. McConnell's GOP bill will rip that away again. Also horrible for seniors, spiking premiums, and worse coverage. And that's from Brucey.
I would just like to say that I think that there was information within the CBO that Republicans who supported the bill used as positives, including the top one being, of course, the deficit of reducing the deficit.
The Democrats,
for what it's worth.
The Democrats are once again behind the curve, says Steve. Why can't they say 22 million Americans will lose their health care, not repeating their health insurance? Way more real. Also, what happened to calling this Trump care not by the Republicans' name for it? And that's from Stephen Narrowsburg, where I went to Boy Scout camp.
Narrowsburg.
I mean, you got to remember that there's people in the Congress who are like Paul Ryan, who are really seeing this as an enormous opportunity to take away an existing entitlement. and to reduce the pressure on the budget that such entitlements do. I mean, they regard this as an enormous coup if they're able to do it. And that's a motivator here for people who believe that.
Disgusting. And to the point of calling it Trump care, I mean, he hasn't really done anything on it, right? I mean, it's not like it's not his bill.
Right. You do it. You take care of it. Don't make it mean. Don't make it mean like the Congress did.
I mean, I'm not sure he's like even read it, much less, name it after him.
But I don't know that our writer isn't correct in that, you know,
the
Democrats should take the same aggressiveness with attaching stuff to bad ideas.
Well, you remember when Mitt Romney during the 2012 one of the debates, he said, and he was deridingly talking about Obamacare, and he goes, "I hope you don't mind. I'm calling it Obamacare." And Obama said, "No, go right ahead. I'm proud of it." You know.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, JP was Romney's guy. What, weren't you, JP?
I worked for Romney. Yes, great guy.
See. But how could a great guy put a dog on the top of the car? I never understood that.
I didn't understand that either.
Okay. Hey, Murray, what do you think?
That election was held and it's over.
Yeah. Okay, Randy said, it is imperative to all not-for-profits to raise funds daily. You're a good man, Randy. Come for lunch. okay. And Corrine says, if the politics are so difficult, and it's damned if you do and damned if you don't, why don't they just do the right thing and vote their conscience? Well, because they want to stay in office. That's why. It's that simple.
They do. They want to stay in office, and they want to bring home other rewards to their home districts and to their states.
I can't even believe, if you think about this, you know, honesty questions, which I always define as questions which you ask people, and if they lie, then a lightning bolt will emerge from the clouds and hit them in the head, right? That's an honesty question. So I would like to have all Republicans ask the honesty question that this letter represents and say, do you really think much of Trump? See?
Well, I think there were Democrats who were unhappy with Obama. I mean, I think you're always going to have some of that.
I would
argue there's probably more Republicans who privately are acknowledging they're scared to death of what he might do next, and they're worried about what it means for their future and the party's future. But so far...
And Republicans do love to win more than anything, just like Democrats. And if
they're better at it because they have fewer people and they're better at making their votes count.
Right. And if they see Trump as a guy that can win the White House and deliver on their policies, they would much rather have him than one of these guys or gals that they agree with on every issue but can't or won't win.
And how do you think the Bushes, for example, feel sitting up there in Kennebunkport watching this or down in Texas?
Do you think those
people are for Trump? Forget it.
I just read that George W. Bush's numbers, when you poll people, are up. People are liking him more as time goes by.
Relatively.
Yes.
Oh, I'll show you how it works.
Yeah.
You take a 50-pound, barbell, and you put it in your hand, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then you take a 5-pound barbell. Which do you like more? Okay.
Okay, got it.
All right.
All right.
Gene says, you will lose listeners and financial support if you usurp your popular programs with fundraising. Please keep it to a minimum. That's from Gene. No, Gene. No. We have to save the radio station. Sorry. It's easy for you to sit there and say something like that. I don't want to seem mean about this, but I am dedicated to the preservation of this radio station, and we're going to do it because we have to. They're going to take $400,000 away. Should we fire Joe? I mean, what should we do? No.
Hey, how did I get into this?
the answer is no, or me.
Blame it on Trump.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
All right, save my job.
And John says, you tell him, Alan, our station doesn't run on pixie dust and wishing really hard. It needs to pay the bills. My husband and I give each fund drive. How much do all of your complainers give exactly?
There you go. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue. We want to talk about Syria. We want to talk about the travel ban. We want to talk about all kinds of other stories, and we'll do that right after this short break. Good morning, and welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, J.P. Miller, and your letters panel at WAMC.org. We'll get to more of those in just a moment. I do We have a lot of other topics to discuss. Let us just start with the Supreme Court taking up the travel ban and allowing parts to go ahead. To me, and I'm interested in what Alan has to say about this, because I think he's been saying it for quite a long time, but the one thing we learned from this decision, we got a little inkling into what Judge Gorsuch would be doing in the future.
Judge Gorsuch, I'm afraid, would be voting with Trump. And I think that's the way it looks. So what they're doing is they're shoving this thing off into the future. It is not, considering the split in the court, oh boy, an unreasonable outcome. The reason I say that is because what they're saying is if you have any business in the United States, you're allowed in. I'm concerned that when Gorsuch gets the vote, they'll uphold the entire ban.
Which he said under, he was calling for, I guess three justices were calling for the ban to stay as is.
Right. So it's
until
a,
they
so
look
it's
at
a
it three, in the
three,
fall.
It's right. a 3-3 split. And Gorsuch doesn't get the vote. Now Gorsuch will vote. It's 3-3. We have nine people on the court. So
right.
It's 4-4 somehow. This was obviously a compromise. They came out, I think it was a unanimous vote. I think it was
9-0. Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
They're saying, okay, we're going to just shove this in the, back to the future, and we're going to say from now on, we'll hear arguments about this. But it doesn't look good to me. But in terms of splitting the Solomon-like baby in half, it's not a bad decision, because why would you tell anybody? I mean, what's happening is in the beginning they were having lawyers down because of, but now everybody who comes in who has a bona fide anything, a relative in the country,
a student, a businessman,
student,
a relative,
any of that stuff.
Yeah. What if they don't? What about those poor people that don't?
Yeah, that's bad. Yeah.
So one of the things that I in watching coverage about this last night that I so do you believe what you watch? Sometimes, but the discussion was this has always been a temporary measure, right? So this has
they want to do it just for 90 days.
This has an expiration date, right? So by letting it go, it is possible that by the time the court gets it in October, that it will have already expired. So then a new order would have to have been put in place, which would then have to go through the same circuitous route that the last one went through, so the court could punt it and say, all right, well, this is no longer valid for us. We will look at the new one as that warrant winds its way through the court.
Why would they do that if the basically conservative faction has the votes? The other thing I keep wondering about is wait a second here. If a Democrat were the president of the United States and was claiming, and I want everybody to sit back and not get mad at me, just think this thing through. If a Democrat were the president of the United States and claiming that he had executive power given to him under the Constitution, whether those of us, and I include myself in, who are so angry about this, would be saying the same thing.
Well, the court has this dilemma about whether to just look at the Constitution and look at executive authority and strictly make a decision based on what he can do. It doesn't mean it has to be good policy. It doesn't mean it has to be the right decision. It just, does he have the legal authority under the Constitution to ban certain country immigrants? And the other question is whether they will consider any comments that the president of the United States made outside of the actual document that imposed the ban, whether his statements prior to being elected about wanting to do a Muslim ban and whether his tweets along the way have any legal standing in considering what they say in the document from the Justice Department and what he says openly in public, and whether, you know, I can do this, but I can tell you the reason behind it is I want to do this. Something.
Well, the handwriting seems to be on the wall.
That they were just going to consider it strictly legally
yes.
about his authority
yes.
as
yes.
under the Constitution.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No, well, I was just going to say, so you have Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas
right.
who are saying the full thing, but also saying that they're concerned about how in the interim of how between now and October, when the court hears this, of how it's actually going to be implemented, because that's going to be chaos because nobody really knows what that means. But also you have Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan, the conservative, or excuse me, the liberal members of the court, likely to vote against it. So, but you have John Roberts and Kennedy who are still, so I don't, do you have the votes? And then that's the, that's
Roberts
the question.
Roberts is an interesting evolution going on. He's not who we thought he was.
And there's a possibility also, there's rumors swirling that Kennedy is getting ready to retire. So,
and if he does,
you got another conservative court. Or you got another conservative on the court.
It doesn't matter what Roberts votes.
Right.
If they decided against Trump's ban, the court, I think, maybe I'm saying this wrong, would be effectively taking away power from the President of the United States and putting in rights for people that are not citizens of the country. And that is in effect what it would be doing. And you see Alito and Thomas and Gorsuch against the three more progressive members. It's going to be a very, very interesting case.
Right. It's not the way you phrase it makes it easier to understand. It's not a Muslim ban. It's not a act of discrimination against people of a certain religion who are expressing their religion. It's the right of the president, a president, to take bold action when he feels that or sees a threat to the United States.
But not against Saudi Arabia, of course, which helped bring down the World Trade Center.
Right. 19 of the World Trade Center or 9/11 terrorists came from Saudi Arabia.
It hurts his argument greatly that that Saudi Arabia is not on the list.
All right. We have about a minute, so let's go to a letter or two.
I heard someone call this Trump no care. Perfect. That's from Kate.
All right.
Mike says, I agree with the proposed health care bill isn't good enough, but I never hear anything about how the current Obamacare is failing, skyrocketing premiums, increased deductibles, and insurers leaving the market. How many people would be without in 10 years under the current Obamacare?
We talked about that yesterday.
We do, and we talk about it all the time. And I always want to ask people like Mike, who's a lovely, wonderful man, obviously, who writes to us, and we love his letters. How did you hear about it, since nobody's talking about it? I always love that. How exactly did you hear about it? Okay, and good morning, panel.
Good morning.
I was wondering if the fact that McConnell is spearheading the Senate version of the health bill while his fellow state senator is in open opposition poll will do anything to stall, hurt the chances of this bill passing, or furthermore, McConnell's standing within his home state.
Well, he's not up for re-election for another 5 years or something like that. I think he's safe.
Till death do us part.
Yeah.
Joyce, who writes to us frequently, why is there no discussion about the inflated prices being charged by doctors, hospitals, and the pharmaceutical industry? Actually, there has been discussion.
Yeah,
about
I mean,
that.
The pharma issue is...
It was on the today...
Marketplace. Yeah. One. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our conversation with the whole panel. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, and J.P. Miller making up the group this morning. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Just a quick addition, one news story that we didn't get in time that just broke from Massachusetts. The Commissioner of Elementary and Secondary Education, Mitchell Chester, has died. A spokeswoman for the State Education Department has confirmed via email that Chester died Monday night but gave no details. She said the department would be issuing a statement later in the day, and we'll have more information on that throughout our newscasts and during Midday Magazine coming up at noon today. All right, let us get a couple of letters, and then we will go off and talk about some other stuff.
Tom says, good morning, panel.
Good morning.
Alan, as you have mentioned many times over the years, this is our station. It's the fate of all of our hands, and you and all at WMC are so very dedicated to defending that fate. May we get to where we need to ASAP. Kudos and admiration to you all. By the way, Alan, congrats on the new grand.
Very cool.
Yeah.
If you missed earlier announcement that Alan is a grandpa again and mm-hmm. has a beautiful little granddaughter to be named later.
Yes, to be named later for another trade. No, says James. This travel ban is meant to be for as long as Trump is around. If the Supreme Court upholds it, they'll extend it again and again for, quote, safety reasons, much like the war on terrorism. Quote, temporary policy having to do with national security has a tendency to never go away. Once you've given it up, this is Alan speaking now. I agree with James. Once you've given it up, it's gone. And Stacy says, hi, panel. Is the Faso Collins Amendment even constitutional? How can the federal dictate internal state taxation policy? Seems to me that to be an overreach by a federal power. Could it be challenged in the courts? Think Faso can kiss his chance of reelection goodbye? I am not familiar with Collins' support, but it does appear that Faso is on thin ice. He's not my rep. I'm voting Stefanik out of office in 2018. Regards from Stacy. Well, obviously, federal policy written into these congressional bills does affect the way in which states go. I have a feeling if Andrew Cuomo could have threatened a lawsuit, he would have long ago done it.
Yeah, I mean, it's the strings that are attached to the Medicaid payments, which the state very, very, very much wants and needs. So it'll have to accept them on those terms and then figure out how they're going to pay for it. So,
yeah.
All right, let's go on to some other talk. Thank you. And we want to, there's some other issues that we want to talk to. We want to talk about Carter Page this morning.
Mentioned Syria,
yeah, that's
too.
Right. Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. I didn't have, thank you very much. Let's talk about Syria. That was the story that I wanted to go to next. And there it is. U.S. says that Syria will pay a heavy price for any chemical attack. President Bashar al-Assad appeared to be preparing a chemical weapons attack similar to the one in April, according to the White House, warning that he would, quote, pay a heavy price if one occurred. This seems to be a line in the sand, as it is being called by those watching the White House this morning. Several military officials were caught off guard by the White House statement from the press secretary, but it was unclear how closely held the intelligence regarding a potential chemical attack was. In the statement, the White House said that Mr. Assad's preparations appeared to be similar to the ones Western intelligence officials believe the Syrian government made before a chemical attack in April that killed dozens of Syrians, including children. As we have previously stated, the United States is in Syria to eliminate the Islamic State of Iraq and Syria, the statement said. If, however, Mr. Assad conducts another mass murder attack using chemical weapons, he and his military will pay a heavy price.
Well, one of the things that's so interesting that you just said, Joe, is that he caught his own military off guard. Now, it's easy enough. I mean, just substitute certain words. Say, okay, if you drop an A-bomb, you're going to pay a very serious price. So now, what's the level of intelligence here? Now, we do know that Trump is on the warpath when it comes to Obama. Anything Obama is bad. And what they're trying to do is say Obama did nothing about all of this stuff. He said that there was a line in the sand and he didn't obey his own line, and I'm not going to do that. But what if he's making it up?
It's a stunning reversal for President Trump, who really campaigned on the premise of saying, who is going to take over for Assad? We don't know who's going to take over for Assad. If Russia's going to do our dirty work in Syria, why don't we allow them to? And so this is a stunning reversal for him to now be going against Russia's interests in Syria and being much more of a hawk than he campaigned on. And it seems to be what a lot of presidents do, is they campaign one way when it sounds like a really great idea, and then they get in the Oval Office and the military advisors tell them this is kind of our only option, and they go along with it.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, it could actually be true. If there were movements of equipment and it could be read through reconnaissance photos, et cetera, that he was gearing up, that Assad was gearing up to do a chemical attack, the president would know about it. And if he, what's interesting is Assad himself, knowing that Putin and Russia is supporting his government, may be emboldened to do something like this.
Or, Mikey, maybe the other way around.
Yeah.
Maybe the Russians are pushing Assad to do something. What are we going
to
do?
To provoke the U.S.?
Yeah, yes.
And pull them deeper into this and for a confrontation? I mean, that's an interesting conspiracy theory that doesn't bode well.
Well, except that the Russians are running things in Syria right now, and then we have to assume anything that Assad is doing has been cleared with the Russians. I mean, he's not going to use chemical weapons if the Russians don't know he's using them, right? Therefore, you have to assume that the Russians either ordered it up or are delighted to see it because it puts the U.S. in some intellectual jeopardy.
Yeah, I should point out, though, that while the military were caught off guard by this announcement, it didn't say they didn't know about this. At least I didn't see that.
Well, off guard means they didn't know about it.
Here's the line, a paragraph I want to read from the Times story, which is, while the White House's motivation in releasing the highly unusual statement is uncertain, it is possible that Mr. Trump or his advisors decided a public warning to Mr. Assad might deter another chemical strike. Any intelligence gathered by the U.S. or its allies, notably Israel, which keeps a robust watch on unconventional weapons in the Middle East, would by nature be classified, but any American president has absolute power to declassify anything he chooses to release.
Yeah.
And the interesting political aspect of this is, if there is not a chemical attack in the next several weeks and months, the president of the United States can claim he stopped a chemical attack that was going to happen.
Certainly.
Public warnings, in my very limited experience, never work. It's saber-rattling. It almost forces Assad to do something to show that he's independent and he's not listening to Trump. And then Trump's going to be forced with having to do something. It was not great that Obama put the line in the sand.
The red line in the sand,
And didn't do it. It's a reasonable criticism, and Trump does not want to be open to that criticism.
Well, the flip side is it may motivate Assad to do something. And if he does another chemical attack, it'd bring the whole world against him and cause enormous pressure, which would be something that the president of the United States might like to see. In a ghastly way, of course, and I'm not suggesting he's trying to provoke such an awful attack, but either way, he's playing politics with saber rattling. I guess that's the right term.
The Pew Research Center has taken an international survey. This is what they found. President Trump has alarmed citizens of the nation's closest allies and others worldwide, diminishing the standing of the United States in their eyes, according to a wide-ranging international study released yesterday. But in the survey of 37 countries, Russia is a bright spot for Trump. As beleaguered as the president is at home, a majority of Russians say they have confidence in Donald Trump. And Russians' attitudes toward the United States have improved since Trump took office. Elsewhere, though, and with remarkable speed, Trump's presidency has taken a toll on the U.S.'s images abroad. The international survey by the Pew Research Center found that favorable ratings of the United States have decreased from 64% of people across all countries surveyed at the end of the Barack Obama presidency to 49% this spring. The new figures are similar to those toward the end of the George W. Bush administration. The president himself has fared even worse. A median 22% are confident that Trump will do the right thing in global affairs, down from 64% who had confidence in Barack Obama. This is from Chile to Italy, from Sweden to Japan. Majorities consider the president arrogant, intolerant, unqualified, and most seriously, dangerous.
Is it important for people in other countries to have a high regard for the president of the United States?
Well, it doesn't hurt. Right?
I mean, our image around the world is important, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt to have people around the world. But unfortunately, he's the president of this country and not of those countries. And that makes a big difference, right, Mike?
Yes, it is. I think his standing here is more important. I agree. And when you want to promulgate foreign policy, having the people in the countries we're aligned with support you helps politicians in those countries support you, and vice versa. But I don't think he particularly cares.
No, I think that's right.
In fact, he loves it. it's a badge of honor for him to have Europeans think
to ride him, sure,
to not like him. He sees that as a badge of honor and a sign that he's doing a good job, I think.
I just have to read this because I find it funny. according to the survey, percentage of people who say Trump is arrogant around the world, 75%. Intolerant, 65%. Dangerous, 62%. A strong leader, 55%. Charismatic, 39%. Qualified, 26%. And caring about ordinary people, 23%.
I'd like to meet the 25% that don't think he's arrogant.
Yeah,
I would think that has to be 100.
But you know, the higher he was in the 50s for leadership, right? Strong leadership or something like that.
Saying a strong leader. Yeah.
So, I mean, they go hand in hand.
Well,
so
a strong leader, not maybe strong leadership.
Well, a strong leader. And arrogance and being a strong leader could go hand in hand, arguably.
Mr. JP, that was so uncalled for. We all love Donald Trump. He's a wonderful man, and he's really concerned about us, don't you see? That is what you people from those blue states believe. But we love our Donald Trump. And by the way, if you think I'm making that stuff up, it's in the press all the time.
I think even Trump lovers, I imagine, would agree that arrogance is one of his qualities.
That may be why they love him. They admire it.
I mean, they like that he's disruptive. They like that he's throwing the traditional Washington inside the beltway into disarray. And the problem is the impact of all this disarray will eventually come down in the form of, you know, programs that serve them now won't serve them as well, or there might be breakdowns in funding for infrastructure and other important things, and they won't even attribute it to him.
Okay, but let's remember that Putin, among all of Putin's designs, are to really interrupt the way in which NATO and the European group are organized. And so part of his plan is for chaos, obviously, within that group, to split them up. And here comes Trump, basically being disliked by all of those people in that very same constituency. That's pretty interesting, right? I mean, in other words, Trump and Putin may be operating in tandem here.
So if you look at the only numbers that went up, 11% of Russians 2 years ago supported Barack Obama or had confidence. That's the word, not support, but confidence in Barack Obama as a world leader. 11%. That has now gone up to 53% in Russia. In Israel, it was 49%. It's now 56%. But on the flip side, Spain was 75% of confidence in Barack Obama. That has now plummeted. They are the lowest in their confidence in the current president, with just 7% saying they have confidence. Germany is 11%, France is 14%, and Britain is 22%, according to the Pew Research Center.
Is Italy in there?
Italy is in here, but I don't have the number right in front of me.
I say that because these are people who voted for Berlusconi, you know, for all of those years. So they've had some experience in having great characters for
colorful characters, yes.
Well, and not a little bit morally corrupt.
Well, in France, too, right? I mean, over the years, so that, which is where now 14%, but it's interesting.
Yeah. Is it problematic to the hardline Trump supporters that he isn't popular with those Europeans? No.
So if he's hated around the world, good for him.
It's a measure, I think.
It's a positive.
Yeah, it's a positive.
He loves that message all day long. I remember during the campaign, they were running some negative ads on him, and they said, "What do you think about these negative ads?" He says, "I like them.
Yeah.
I would run them myself." So negatives from Europeans, he'll take that every day.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have some letters to fill out our time.
Why are we not considering the efficacy of the travel ban in the context of terrorist attacks? During the time period that the ban has been on hold, there has been no increase in terrorism in the U.S., I'm so sorry, perpetrated by visitors from the targeted countries. Do we really need, in quotes, the ban to increase security? And that's from our friend Don.
That's not the question before the Supreme Court, whether we need this ban or whether the ban is good or whether it's smart. It's whether the president has executive authority to do it.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. The panel, the latest White House proclamation regarding Syria illustrates the danger of Trump's lack of credibility and his manifest fondness for Vladimir Putin. The strange statement that Syria was preparing to again deploy chemical weapons has fueled speculation that it's all kabuki theater. That is, Putin is manufacturing a crisis in the Middle East to provide a distraction from Trump's domestic troubles. Hey, hello, panel. Riddle me this.
Hello.
Riddle me this. If the travel ban is supposed to be for 90 days so they can review their procedures, and the president has been in office, I've been thinking about this too, by the way, for 150 days.
Are they not reviewing it now?
Doesn't that make the basis obsolete? Do they really need the ban first?
Yeah. No, that's a reasonable question. Yeah. I mean, they want the ban so they can review the policy. Wouldn't you think it would still be possible to review it?
No, but what they really want, Mike, is the ban, period.
Right.
Okay, so, dear panel, couldn't Trump's making moves against Russian interests with Syria be designed to put distance in the public's mind between himself and Russia in light of the ongoing investigation? And that's from Stephen. And I think Stephen makes a very good point, and here's what it is. The last thing that Trump wants to hear is the word Russian right now, because I think it's scaring him to death. And I think that you've got these multiple investigations going, and he knows it. Okay, one last one. Joe Bob says, as the FBI investigation proceeds, Trump will need a distraction. And what better distraction than an overseas military adventure, Bob?
All right, we are out of time. No. My thanks to Alan and Mike Spain, J.P. Miller. Thank you all for being with us. Just a reminder, you can help the First Amendment Fund by going to WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And also, we still have the tickets for undated lawn tickets to SPAC for a $100 donation to the First Amendment Fund, WAMC.org, or you can call us 1-800-323-9262. We will continue our conversation on the roundtable after this.